When I looked up, she was standing there. Pretty long, black, shiny hair. And I heard her say, do you need a little company? But in that old bar, the lights were dim. And I'll bet she didn't notice them. Two old faithful friends right here with me. I've got red wine and blue memories and a heartache that won't set me free. Drinking, lots more time for thinking. I've got red wine and blue memories. Then she turned and walked away and shook her head as if to say, man, time with me. Oh, but I just poured another glass, toasted someone from the past, some old but not forgotten memory. I've got red wine, blue won't set me free. I've got lots of time for drinking, lots more time for thinking. I've got red wine and blue memories.
Domestic, that I will bear true faith and allegiance to the same. so help me God.
Revolution. Loading now.
Revolution. Loading now.
Revolution. Loading now.
Revolution.
Welcome to the Shooting Bench on Survival Circle Radio Network, keeping you informed on guns, news, politics, guns, survival, preparedness, and guns. The tyrant is holding our country hostage, and our freedom is at stake. It's time to take a stand and tell the tyrant, we will not comply. Join me now in the never-ending fight against tyranny, right here on the Shooting Bench. And welcome to the Shooting Bench. It's Monday, the 29th of August. The month is effectively gone right now. I cannot believe that it's been, I don't know if you, for those of you that caught Amy's show a while ago, she's talking about the weather around here. We've been down in the low 40s. We've been as low as 44 degrees at night here. And today, it hardly made it up to, I'm not even sure. Well, it made it up to 70 today. I'm not sure it did yesterday. And that's really nice weather, but it's August. July, I'm not sure if it was this year. I'll have to go look, but I've got a picture of in July during the day at 4:20 in the afternoon. It was 54 degrees and dark, like it was going to snow, but it was a one day thing. It has been this way the whole month of August. August is hot, and it's just been really weird this year. And I'm not complaining about it, because August, it's been so nice, man. But if this is any indication of what the rest of the year is going to be, starting off this cool in August, we're going to be building fires here pretty shortly. Traditionally, when it starts cooling off like that, it goes pretty quickly, but it just doesn't usually start cooling off in August. It's usually September. I don't know. It's really, really strange to me. I've went on and on about this with Amy, talking about it, and said, man, this is crazy, because it's just, I can live with a day or two like that. That happens everywhere. I remember, and I think I've probably told you all before, in Cody, Wyoming, back in, '96, maybe? '95 or '96, when Steven Seagal was there in the 4th of July parade, it was 45 degrees and snowing. But it wasn't 45 degrees and snowing all of July, it was a one-day thing. In that particular year, we could see snow up on the mountains every single month of the year except August. That was kind of a cool one there, too. Oh, well, anyway, hope everybody had a fun weekend. I worked a lot of mine. I did go out and shoot just a little bit. I found out when I did that I probably need to do it a little more. I'm a little off on my times and stuff there, so need to get out and do just a little bit more of that. For those of you that are interested, if you're in the Southwest anywhere, we're going to have a class up in Moriarty, New Mexico, 23rd, 24th, and 25th of September, last weekend of September. And hopefully some of you can make it out there tonight. It's going to be the 3-day personal defense handgun class. And it's going to be, we're breaking it up a little bit for the second time, actually the third time. We did this in Washington this summer. We did it in New Mexico last month. And we're going to do it again because it seems like it works pretty well. And that is to allow people to take the first 2 days of the class, if they're not quite ready to get their feet wet and go the full, or maybe they can't afford it or don't have the time off to go the full 3 days. And it's worked out pretty well. And whether we'll continue to do it or not, I'm not 100% sure, but we might. It's working out all right. Another thing we're starting up here, starting the 16th of September, I'm going to start offering some abbreviated that's not true. They're not abbreviated. What's happened is I'm busting up that 8-hour disaster preparedness seminar. A lot of people are having a hard time, you know, justifying a full day to do that. You know, you and I don't understand them because, you know, what's a full day of training? What's a full weekend of training? What is 3-day weekend, 4-day weekend? But some of these folks just don't get it. So, in order to help them get it, I'm going to spend more time. You know, the 8-hour, I tell everybody every time I start that class, one of the first things I tell them is that this could easily be a 40-hour class. But nobody's going to invest the time or the money to take a 40-hour class. So I've packed as much information as I possibly can into 8 hours. And it's just the way it has to work. But there's what I'm doing now is expanding on some of those topics where we're only, you know, spending 30 minutes or so on something that I would desperately like to spend 2 or 3 hours on, but just don't have the time if I want to cover everything. So I'm going to take some of those individual topics out and spend more time on them, and I'm going to make a full set of those and do them here locally. Obviously, I can't go too far out of town and do those because of the, you know, just a 4-hour class. But what I'm trying to do, and you know, sometimes I wish I wouldn't do this, but I feel the need so desperately to get people to wake up and get prepared and get on with this, you know, and quit talking about it. And so this 4-hour classes are going to be, I'm depending on volume. I'm depending on people to show up to make this worth my while, because I'm going to be doing these classes for $25. 4-hour class, and I'm going to be doing the first set of them on the 16th of September, and I'll be doing two of them that day. They'll be $25 a piece for 4 hours. The first one will be disaster communications, where you know, we spent quite a bit of time on that here on the show. We're going to go over every feasible means to stay in touch with your group, your unit, your family members, extended family, and maybe authorities, you know, if things are holding together well enough during a worst-case disaster scenario. We'll talk about wired communication, wireless communications, long distance, short distance, some things on installation, what it's going to cost you to get into this, licensing, EMP protection, just everything that we can possibly think of, and stuff that into 4 hours. Now, we can't obviously, you know, talk about programming radios and all that kind of stuff in that period of time. But, I mean, we can touch on it, but we won't be able to spend that much time, because we also need to save some time in there for how to make an emergency communications plan for your group, for your family, for your community, and also secure communications, all of which we have talked about here on the show more than once. So that's going to be our disaster communications class, and that'll last till noon, and then we'll eat a bite of lunch. I've actually got this set up where I hope it works kind of neat, where you can just click on the PayPal button at the bottom of the... You can find these on our webpage. Go to Personal Preparedness, and then look for Prep Seminars. I need to probably change that to Preparedness Seminars, but there's going to be a list of these shorter classes there. And the other one is going to go along with the book that we have, our 40-page Community Emergency Response and Preparedness Training Manual. And it's going to be another four-hour class from 1 o'clock to 5 o'clock. And this is where we'll discuss above and beyond. You know, we know that a lot of people are individually prepared, but how much thought have you given to you know, large families, neighborhoods, small communities and towns, possibly even as large as a county? This will kind of help people understand how huge of an undertaking it's going to be to protect the community's assets, to dole out the community's assets, and how it's going to be. We talk about people combining their resources so that they can keep everybody eaten and healthy, obviously, and we talk about the constitutionality of forcing people to do that. Obviously, we can't just take their stuff away from them if they don't want to do it. But it would be beneficial to everybody if we can put that all together, get a planning commission, a committee put together, and plan meals and distribute things out in such a way to keep everybody healthy and living for as long as we possibly can. And same thing with fuel and firewood and parts and pieces and building materials and all this kind of stuff. So we'll get into community defense and medical and power and communications concerns, setting up alternative governments if in fact the everything, the worst case, and there's, you know, there is no government, there is no 911, there's, you know, you're it. There may not be any law enforcement. So we're going to have to, early on in the game, communities and neighborhoods are going to have to get together and say, look, you know, we've got this guy over here. He was, he was just freshly back from Iraq. He's been on the police department for, a couple of years and all that. So we're going to make him our chief of police, answerable to our town council or whatever. You know, everybody, I went over several different ways to go about that to keep from hurting everybody's feelings and try to keep peace in the community when and if that happens. So anyway, that's going to be the second class. Seating's kind of limited in both of them. It's a fairly good sized room. I've done classes in it before. It will be at the America's Best Value Inn in Snowflake, Arizona. That is at 2055 South Main Street. It used to be, for those of you that are local and listening, that used to be the old Comfort Inn. I just found out today that the Comfort Inn is no more, and probably because the people that ran it were probably not the epitome of motel runners. So I think they slammed the door on them and kicked them out and turned it into something else. I was looking today to several different options there to get into to do classes, and I wanted to do that place because they had a nice room to do it in. But then saw that and then found out that this America's Best Value took them over, so that works out perfectly. Rental of the room is a little higher than I want to pay on it, and especially when I'm charging so little for these classes. But hopefully people will step up here and jump in and get involved in this. Let's see what's going on. What do you mean 0x0? Is Peanut Rider the only one that's not got any sound? Let's see, somebody just sent me a Skype here. And Peanut Rider says the sound is back. So which is it? Are we dead or are we alive? Let me see if I can turn up my volume here. Pumpkin Cats. Okay, looks like it's a... if even one person has sound out there, then if anybody else doesn't, it's in your settings or whatever. So, alright. Okay, let's move along here. Let me get over on my other screen. Operator headspace and timing, I think, is what they call that, Pumpkin Cat. Bring if I can get my other screen up. There it is. All right, let's see which one of these. Eeny, meeny, miny. Let's see. Let's do this one first. I like Mossad Ayoub. He's a little more liability conscious than I like. I do believe that there are tremendous concerns for liability, but I also believe that people can push people so hard and make them so scared of it that they hesitate in their actions and what they're doing. And I tell people, you've got to remember one thing. You have to be alive to be sued. So, you know, train well, learn properly, practice as much as possible, think about these things, spend some time mental imaging through these scenarios and make sure that that you really feel like you're doing the right thing at the right time for the right reasons, and you'll be okay. But I think Mossad Ayoub is a great writer. He's a great authority on this. Sometimes I just think he might be a little bit leaning towards the liability scared side just a little bit. But you know, and the other thing is, I guess when you write as many books and do the things that he does, you probably kind of have to be to protect yourself. So that may be part of it. But anyway, he wrote this article about 7 tips for the armed citizen to fight terrorists. And if you'll notice, a great many of the professional trainers out there now are beginning to change their home defense tactics and reasoning and stuff a little bit, because there are getting to be more of the a stronger possibility of whether it's, you know, ISIS type terrorists or just domestic terrorist gangs and stuff. But you know, I don't think we ought to call them gangs. I think they are terrorists. Not all of them, but I think a great many of them are. So, Mossad Ayoub has written for probably pretty much every gun magazine out there on stuff like this. So, we will certainly take his advice into consideration here. And his number one deal, I want to see how many of these that I agree with. You know, we changed 2 months ago, we changed our, there's that cotton pits, a different mouse. Because I set a trap the other day and got the other one. It looks like I'm going to have to do it again. A little cotton picker. Huh. I'll be darned. That's what I get for having wireless mice, I guess. On these. Anyway, 2 months ago we changed from a home invasion type thing to more of a... not home invasion, home... protection of home. We changed more from protection of home more towards protection of liberty, where our enemies might be, our assailants might be different type of I'm going to try my knife again when he gets over here a little closer. He's up in the rafters right there. Towards protection of liberty, protection of the home front, maybe even protection of an entire community if it came to a bomb or something. That's why people are, we talked about this a week or two ago, where people are starting to teach more more training on the head shots than the body shots for two reasons. One of them, they may be wearing a vest. You don't want to shoot the vest. The other one is they may pull a string on the vest, and if you shoot them in the thoracic cavity or the body anywhere, if you don't shoot them, if you shoot them anywhere except for the cranioocular cavity. Oh, I stuck the knife, but I'm right over his head. I missed him by about 4 inches. Oh, dang it. Now I got to go get my knife. It's stuck in the ceiling over there. And we're doing the same thing. But his first number one rule here, or tip, and we should all be doing this anyway. Always go armed whenever possible. I changed that to always go armed. You know, there's just very few times that you can't make some changes in your schedule or whatever. I understand that there are people that have jobs, good jobs, that they don't want to quit and don't want to lose, close to retirement and things like that. Obviously, most people are not going to sacrifice or jeopardize that to go armed. Now, going armed doesn't always necessarily mean a gun. It may mean an edged weapon. It may mean pepper spray. It may mean a taser or a stun gun, monkey fist, you know, any number of things. But have something. Unless you are well trained in the art of hand-to-hand combat, take something. The next thing is, and good advice here, is remember the risks of intervening. And we have talked about that here on the show a few times. Are you getting involved in something that you're going to ruin your life over? And you know, it's your own morality and ethics that are going to govern what you could, should, or would do in a situation like this. I've talked about the time or two when it's a catch-22, if you ask me, for some of us. And that is, let's say you found a man killing a woman. He's stabbing her. Or he's got a gun up to her head. He's about to blow her head off. And you shoot him, and rightfully so. And then she sues you, because that was the only means that she had to support her kids. He may have been a thief. He may have been a drug runner. He may have been a lot of things, but he was paying his child support on time. And when that goes away, she's got to have some way to make up for it, substitute for it. And that's going to be your bank account. Now, fortunately, here in Arizona and quite a few other states, we have a castle doctrine and stand your ground laws and stuff like that, where it prevents you from being sued, providing your shooting was justified. But nevertheless, you know, there's a lot of other states that are not that way. So there could very well be some issues for intervening in something like that if you're not well trained, well versed in the consequences of that. So make sure that you're willing to do that before you decide to go out and save the world. The third thing he says is, don't draw your gun until you're absolutely sure that you need to. Well, that's kind of a given, I think. It's there may be a few rare exceptions to that. In you know, here in Arizona, we have law that prevents us from getting in trouble for what they would call brandishing. We have written in statute, we have the ability here, the legal ability, to pull a gun out and there's a fine line there between intimidation and whatnot, but there's let's say that the guy was, and I've used this scenario a million times, let's say that there's a guy across the street over here. He's got a baseball bat. He's already told you he's going to beat you to death as soon as he gets across the street. So he has the ability and he has the intent to do what he plans to do there. He just doesn't quite have the opportunity yet because he needs to get a little bit closer for that baseball bat. In Arizona, at least, I don't know how many other states, you have the legal right to pull that gun out. Maybe not to point it at him and threaten him directly, but to display it and say, I have a gun, don't come any closer. Or, you know, don't threaten me with that or I'll shoot or whatever. So that's, we have some pretty good gun laws here in Arizona. You just have to know what they are. So there's, and I go over this in excruciating detail in my concealed carry class. I tell you what, I'm going to go get my knife out of the ceiling here, and I'm going to put a little peanut butter on that mouse trap and see if we can just have some mouse catching right here on the shooting bench. So this song right here goes out especially to Graham Harbold's opponent.
Bimbo, bimbo, where you gonna go, we old bimbo, bimbo, what you gonna do, we old bimbo, bimbo, does your mommy know that you're going down the road to see a little girlie, oh. Bimbo is a little boy who's got a million friends, and every time he passes by, they all invite him in. He'll clap his hands, sing and dance, and talk his baby talk, with a hole in his pants and his knees sticking out, he's just big enough to walk. Bimbo, bimbo, where you gonna go, we old bimbo, bimbo, what you gonna do, we old bimbo, bimbo, does your mommy know that you're going down the road to see a little girlie, gum to start his day off right. All the girlies follow him just to beg him for a bite. Bimbo, bimbo, candy on your facey, oh, bimbo, bimbo, chewing on your gummy, oh, bimbo, bimbo, when you're gonna grow. Everybody loves you, little baby bimbi,
stand with you if you don't stand. God can't stand with you if you don't stand. And don't stand and then sit down. It's worse. It sets a precedent. You know, count the cost. The cost may be dear. It may be everything. It may be your life. Okay? But unless we're willing to value freedom more than our lives, do we really deserve freedom? God can't stand with a man until the man stands. And so God is waiting for us to stand. And at that moment that when he stands, God could stand with him. And then the other thing is that people could stand with him. You know, nobody can stand with you until you stand.
Welcome back to another segment of The Shooting Bench, right here on the Survival Circle Radio Network. All right, the mouse trap is set, and I'm watching it here. You know, I don't know what how they're getting in this cotton picking building. I'm gonna have to do some research here and see what's going on. All right, let's get back to our deal here. The fourth thing that he's got, the third one is don't draw your gun until you're absolutely sure you need to. I agree, with a few very rare exceptions. Number four, once you are done shooting, hide or holster the gun as soon as possible. I'd say holster. I wouldn't say hide. I'm not sure it depends on what he means by hide. I don't know if he's talking about sticking it in his waistband and untucking your shirt so it can't be seen. So he goes on here to say, in the same vein, once you have the killer down, holster as soon as possible. You don't know if other good folks, including police officers, arriving officers, have come and knowing someone is killing the innocent. So, yeah, okay. I mean, he's just getting it out of sight there. And that's the same thing we tell people in our classes, is don't be standing there holding a gun when the cops drive up. However, there may be some exceptions to that. Let's say that you're in a kind of cornered in an area somewhere where you can't get away. There may have been more than one assailant. You shot and you saw one of them go down, but you don't know where the other one's at. You call 911. I'm not sure that holstering the gun and sitting there waiting is the best thing to do. And I tell, one of the things that I make sure and tell people in my classes that I spend a lot of time on is I'm very adamant about, there are exceptions to every rule. Everything that you're going to do out here, there will be exceptions to it. There are too many variations, too many things going on in a situation like that. You just can't lay down hard, fast rules all the time. So, yes, I agree. Holster it if you can without putting yourself in jeopardy. Let's put it that way. That's my opinion on it. Number five. Now, he's doing just the same thing a lot of the rest of us are doing here. Practice your marksmanship, especially headshots. You know, I think about this all the time, and I've even thought about it today when I was thinking about getting out and getting some more practice done. And one of the things that we've said, I'm not the only one that says it, there's quite a few places that say it. If you get out and you're shooting at a relatively similar to a man-sized target, and you can hit the thoracic cavity, you can hit the deal fairly regular. What about if you're shooting a 12-inch group from 7 yards and you say, well, that would work, that would put him down? Well, yeah, it probably would. But that's assuming that you're standing in the same well-lit, level, stress-free environment and he's not shooting back. He's standing still, you're standing still, and there's no other people around. Maybe you can get by with that. But ideally, you know, when we tell people that you can expect at the very best that you can shoot out in a lethal force environment out there, and when someone's shooting back at you, is probably equal to about half of the very worst that you've ever done on the range. Now, obviously, those numbers change when you practice a lot. But you need to account for the fact that it may be a low-light environment. It may... He may be moving, you may be moving, there may be hostages, there may be people in the way running and screaming and everything. No telling what the distance is. There may be contrasting colors or non-contrasting colors that would keep you from being able... This is one of the things that when we shoot at night, we tell people it's not a matter of, yes, you can turn the flashlight on and sure he's all lit up. But, you know, that changes towards late evening when the sun goes down and the shadows start getting long. Your distance perception is thrown off out of kilter there quite a bit. And the when the shadows, it not only changes how you see your distance, it also changes... how you see the targets. They may look larger, may look smaller, thinner, fatter, because of shadows. So that's another thing that you practice a lot. So don't, there's not any such thing as, well, that's good enough in what we're talking about. The more you practice and the better you get, the better chance you have of surviving this, this scenario. Number six. Consider shooting from the kneeling position. Well, yeah, of course. Kneeling, prone, rollover prone, rice paddy prone, the squat, as they call it. We practice shooting from all kinds of different positions. Right hand, left hand, one hand, both hands. And I think that in our three-day class, in the Personal Defense Handgun 3, like we're doing the end of September in New Mexico, we do all of those things. We shoot from kneeling. We shoot from standing. We shoot from prone. We shoot with one hand. We shoot with both hands. We shoot left-handed. We shoot right-handed. And so you kind of get a feel for that. Obviously, you can't become entirely proficient in all of those things. Good night, Pumpkin Cat, if I haven't missed you already. You can't become proficient in all of those things in a three-day class, but the class is not to make you proficient. The class is to give you ideas of things to practice on your own, and we do enough repetition to start building that muscle memory, which will go away if you don't practice. Shooting is a highly degradable skill, and it will absolutely disappear on you. It's not like riding a bicycle. You know, you'll remember the basics and stuff, but that that speed and that accuracy and that being able to change hands, you know, mid-fight and all that, that stuff will disappear on you. So, you know, take the time and like I said, dry practice is a huge... good night, Yakima Glock. Dry practice is a huge deal. And it is a very good technique to build your skills, and it's something that obviously the marksmanship unit of the 75th Rangers, what did he call himself? It was a let me see if I can find that email real quick. It wasn't the marksmanship unit, I don't think. Marksmanship program. It wasn't the Army marksmanship unit that you... this is a marksmanship program within the 75th Ranger Regiment there. And they are buying a lot of these dry practice kits, and I just got an email from him this morning early that said they are... I don't want to go over all the details of it, but anyway, it's going to turn out to be a very good deal for me, and there's also going to be another branch of the service that I should be hearing from probably within the next 10 days or so. So that could work out very well. We're hoping that works anyway. All right, let me go back. You know what? Let me check something here just real briefly because... there are some things going on out there that I need to keep track of. And I just got a message here that I need to check on here. Alright, I can get that back to her later. Alright, let me get back to, that was number 6 that we just did. Practice shooting from the kneeling position. Use cover and concealment. Now, you know, some of us that practice a lot, we may think, well, yeah, duh. Of course you do that. But not everybody thinks the way that we do. That's why we give these classes. That's why we have Personal Defense Handgun 1, is because not everybody looks at this stuff the way that some of us do. And you have to get past that. If you want to be an effective, good trainer, you have to get past that and look and say, well, you know, just because I know it doesn't mean they know it. If they knew it, they wouldn't be here. They wouldn't be spending the money for me to tell them. So, yeah, of course, you want to. First thing you need to do is teach them the difference between cover and concealment. For those of you that don't know, cover is protection from small arms fire. It is something that will stop or, hugely slow down a bullet. And concealment means they can't see you. Doesn't mean they can't shoot you accidentally because you haven't got anything. And sometimes cover and concealment are not the same thing. That would be in the case of bulletproof glass. You have cover, but you have no concealment. So, but ordinarily, cover and concealment can be or are one and the same. Concealment is not always cover, but cover is most generally concealment. So, it pays to know what your what a normal handgun is capable of. If you go and watch my YouTube video on, I think it's called Take Cover or Not, and that's the one where we've shot rifles and handguns through a 55 gallon drum full of water. And surprisingly enough, all the handguns zipped right through it like it wasn't even there. Now, I don't know what the velocity was coming out on the other side of the barrel, but all of the handgun bullets exited perfectly round holes on the other side. One rifle bullet exited, a couple of them almost, we're talking 7.62 with 39, 223, and 308. One bullet left the barrel, and it left sideways. None of the other bullets left. And this has something to do with, I'm not a scientist, I don't know, but it has something to do with cavitation and the high velocity of the bullet. So kind of like if you take the flat of your hand on standing in the swimming pool and slap the water as hard as you can, it hurts. And it doesn't go very, it kind of like it hits something reasonably solid for a minute before the water gives way. On the other hand, if you take and just set your hand on top of the water and just push, there's literally no resistance. And that's how it affects the handgun bullet. The slower velocity, even up to the speed of the 9mm, the 9mm, the 40. I don't remember if we tried a 45 or not. I'd have to watch the video again. But we did a couple of different 9mm and 40s, and they just zipped right on through the barrel. They had no problem getting through that. That's our cover and concealment discussion for the time being. All right, let me get back over here to the chat room, see what's going on, see if anything's happening that we need to check on here. We're losing a lot of people for some reason. Is it my breath or what? I took a shower last night. Jeez, come on, guys. All right. Okay, let's move on here into bigger and better things. I love stories with happy endings. The remember Paul Lathrop? We talked about Paul Lathrop here some time ago. We were talking a while ago about brandishing and whatnot. Well, Paul Lathrop actually got arrested for brandishing. And that was back in February that we talked about this. He was accused of brandishing a firearm and making terroristic threats at a truck stop in Nebraska. Well, earlier this week, they've decided it wasn't as bad as they thought it was and dropped all the charges. And I guess there was quite a few people that helped to fund this, helped get him a lawyer and all that. So here's what we've learned about this. He's a truck driver, drives a truck for a living, and he actually is a trainer. He was teaching a student driver at the time when this happened. The student was behind the wheel as they were driving through the truck stop. And a driver who was parked in the lot climbed up onto Paul's truck to yell at the student. And Paul defused the situation rather than call 911. This was a very expensive mistake for him. At the time, no one knew that it was going to take place like this, but it was a mistake because, and don't tell me, we haven't talked about this on the show. The irate driver called the police and claimed that Paul threatened him and waved a silver Glock revolver out of the window of the truck. Okay, then. Yeah, I'm going to get me one of those silver Glock revolvers. It's on my list. It is something that I would desperately love to have. As a matter of fact, I would pay a lot of damn money. I would give up most of my guns to have a silver Glock revolver. Because I wouldn't have it for very long. I would, I'd put that on Gunbroker and I'd be a multi-bazillionaire in short order. Anyway, this is why I've talked about being the first one to the telephone. If something happens, don't say, well, I'm glad they changed their mind and left. Let's go on to the show. No, you'd be better off. Even if they changed their mind and left, it would be better for you to go ahead and immediately call 911 and tell them what happened so that they don't go call 911 and miscommunicate what really happened and have you get in trouble. So the police considered the irate driver to be the victim. Is that not the words, almost the exact words that I've used before? But they finally come up with a security video that shows otherwise. The testimony of the driver, of Paul, and his student matched the video and indicated otherwise. That the police only dropped the charges after Paul spent tens of thousands of dollars hiring a lawyer and repeated trips out of state to work through the legal system. Paul's lawyer had the truck stop video to get him off the hook. They say that this is the important lesson here. The prosecuting attorney in Nebraska would have happily prosecuted and convicted an innocent man of firearm charges. The only way that justice was done was because a few hundred of us helped Paul pay for his defense. You only get the justice that you pay for. Now, that's a, pardon the expression, but that's a piss poor lesson to have to learn here. You know, the lesson could be something like, be sure and call 911, don't point a gun at somebody that doesn't have one, or, blah, blah, blah. But the lesson should not be that you're going to go to jail, even if you're innocent, if you don't have some way to, without a shadow of a doubt, to exonerate you, to prove that you didn't do it. So, tens of thousands of dollars later, he's a free man. So, the author of this thing says, we all need to have $20,000 or $30,000 sitting in the bank to pay for our defense, or we're going to get abused by a prosecutor. Well, I hate to say that, Spud, but I'm afraid that me and most of my friends, that's not going to be happening. I've got a few friends that might could do that, but I guarantee you I ain't one of them. Said, if you don't have those assets, then you should buy insurance plans that will pay for your bail and your legal defense. Now, there are some USCCA, United States Concealed Carry Association, has insurance that you can get that's not horribly expensive. The NRA has some. And I don't think it's an entirely bad idea. Even if, even here where we have Castle Doctrine and Stand Your Ground, thing could still go wrong. Something could happen to where, even though you were right, something may happen so that, it doesn't. What am I trying to say here? I'm trying to do too many things at once. But there may be, let's say, how would I put it? There's some bad evidence of some kind. You know, if somebody come out where there's a couple of witnesses that got together and made up their story, even though you knew you were right, but you can't prove it. You know, that insurance still may come in handy. If you go to another state that doesn't have those kind of laws, it may come in handy. So it wouldn't hurt to look into something like that anyway. So, all right. Well, we're right up pretty close to break time again. So let's take a break. I'll be back in a few minutes.
And I'll ask you cowboys to know something. There's a new sheriff in town.
Hello there, honey. Sure got a pretty smile. Would you mind if I pulled up a chair so we could talk for a while? What's your name? Where are you from? Are you married? I don't want no jealous man after me. Want a drink? Something special? Or a lady. Just relax, have a sip, and talk to me.
If you've got 10 minutes, let's fall in love.
We can love all our troubles away.
If you've got 10 minutes, let's fall.
So many ways. Why'd you leave him? Did he cheat? Did he hurt you? It's a shame to do a woman that way. What you got there? Some pictures? Well, your little girl, she looks just like you. Are you crying?
He must have cheated all of your love away. So if you've got 10 minutes, let's fall in love.
We can love all our troubles away.
If you've got 10 minutes, let's fall in love.
So many ways. What's that? I didn't hear you, hon. Am I married? Well, yes, I am, kind of, in a way, you might say. Now, wait a minute. Are you leaving? Oh, come on back, hon. What's the matter?
My wife don't love me, she never cared anyway. But if you've got 10 minutes, let's fall in love.
We can love all our troubles away.
But if you've got 10 minutes,
many ways.
You have a weapon?
Yeah, a big one. How about you?
You sure you want to get cute with me? You have a backup weapon?
Never had the need.
Get one. Keep that in your suit unless I tell you to take it out.
Get yourself a Glock. Lose that nickel-plated sissy pistol.
Just a good old boy. Never made it no harm. Be told you never saw them in trouble with the law since the day they was born.
The shooting bench is making some major changes. Starting the 1st of August, the shooting bench is only going to be on 3 days a week. 3 days? Well, not to worry. I'm going to take a couple of days off and you get an extra hour of listening time. Catch the shooting bench now at its regular time on Monday and Wednesday, but for 2 hours. The second hour on Wednesday will be all gun talk, outdoor stuff. Your extra hour comes in on Friday, where we start at 7 p.m. Pacific time, 10 Eastern, and run for 3 hours. An hour to catch up on news and current events and Liberty Lounge at its regular time. Join me for the shooting bench right here on the Survival Circle Radio Network.
I'm a good old boy. You know my mama loved me. But she don't understand. They keep her showing my hands and not my face on TV.
Welcome back to another segment of the Shooting Bench, right here on the Survival Circle Radio Network. All right, we're back. Let's start the second hour here of the Shooting Bench. These 2 hour shows, I'm taking me some getting used to here. I gotta spend a little more time preparing. I can breeze through an hour without even thinking about it, but now I have to think about it, and that kind of hurts. So let me get through this. I'm going to go check my chat room real quick before we get too far away here. And see what's going on here. I don't know what happened to Uncle Eddie here. I have to check and go back through the post here and see what happened. All right. There's my contact in Tucson again. Okay, that's squared away. All right, now this has got to be one of the stupidest things I've ever heard. I don't know what's a good word for this. It is astonishing, mind-boggling, flabbergasting. Some of you have seen this on Facebook or in the news or something. Just a day or two ago, the Louisiana police are, you know, all these floods that's going on. They are charging volunteer rescuers a fee for rescuing. Meaning you can't go out and help these people unless you've got a permit. I One of those several times seem to be getting more frequent when I have no words. How? You know, I want to say it's stupid, it's retarded, but it's gone way beyond that. There's another story here that goes along with that. Let me back up here and get this other one. Might be a little bit. Well, it looks like I may have lost it. But anyhow, they're charging people a permit, a fee to go out and do this. They're saying that there's liability concerns and all. You know, when I was in these in similar floods in Houston, it was in Houston when I went through it twice. I was actually living in Houston proper one time, and another one was out by out north of Houston, close to Cleveland, Texas, just south of Cleveland. And, you know, this was, I've got many, many, many pictures of what happened during this time, of cars floating down the streets and houses, you know, up to the eaves in water and stuff like that. And we stayed out literally all night long, till, you know, into the next day, helping people retrieve some of their stuff as the water was rising, trying to get it out of the house. You know, and me and my cousin, we actually went swimming. We were diving down. We dove down and probably 10 foot of water. Went down and hooked up a chain to a truck so it could be pulled out right away instead of sitting there until it filled up with sand and sticks and cotton mouths and whatnot, and then dragging it out. And went into houses and got stuff out. Went into one house that was sitting down kind of low, and we went in there. It was waist deep when we went in there. And we took everything we could find that was, you know, somewhat valuable. Everything that we could find that we could, we stuffed it up in the attic, stuffed it up in the top shelves of the closets and all that. But some of it was saved, but most of it was still ruined because it was, you know, it got up above the eaves of the house and got up into the top shelves of all the closets and stuff. Some of the stuff we put up in the attic made it, but. I've got so many pictures of that when we did that. But, you know, that kind of got off on a tangent there. But that was, you may find this hard to believe, but those people thanked us. You know, permit or no permit, paying no fee, whatever, they were damn proud to have us in there. We were working in this town at the time, and we forgot about our stuff. We were so damn busy getting everybody else's trucks and everything out. That we forgot about our own. And I've got pictures of our stuff. I actually have pictures of me in a boat going up to beside one of our trucks, and the water was top of the steering wheel height in the cab. You know, it was over the bed. You could just see the top of the cab sticking up like a turtle shell sticking up out of the dirty water there. And we had a generator down there. We had a little dozer down there. We had an air compressor. And all of that stuff was, of course, we didn't lose it all. If you don't try to start it until you get it all cleaned up and drained and fixed, you know, it's salvageable, but it's still a pain in the neck. So. Anyway, I can't imagine why they would charge people. To help people out like that. All right, let's try to take these What was this? No, we'll skip that one for now. I don't think we need to do that. Oh, by the way, tomorrow is the primary election here in Arizona. We are hoping that Graham Harbold has played all of his cards right and everything, and hopefully he'll be he'll win the primary. And I think it's a slam dunk. I'm pretty confident that he's going to walk away with this pretty easily. The next bigger fight will be his going up against Casey Clark here in Navajo County. That's the only office that I'm really watching right now. That's my biggest concern, is our constitutional sheriff deal here. If that goes according to plan, then everything else will fall into place. I will be, and Molly, if you happen to come in, there's going to be a, and I assume it's open to everybody. There's going to be a election watch type thing down at the Lion's Den tomorrow night, and I have every intention of trying to be there. So if you're in town, you might want to swing by. But anyway, it ought to be a lot of fun. We'll see what happens. This has been a kind of an ugly race, mainly because the other side they're like school children. They're just amazingly ridiculous. I've never seen anything like it in my life. But anyway, it'll all come one way or another. It's all going to come to a screeching halt tomorrow, and we'll find out what happens after that. All right. Now there was something here in Louisiana that they called the Cajun Navy, and this was a bunch of Cajun. Now what they call them now? Now don't go calling the what do you call them? The shoot. Anyway, they call them coonasses down there. And that's has nothing to do with anything other than it is a name for certain types of Cajuns down there. They call themselves that. It is the standard way of describing some of these. And by the way, all the coonasses that I know, well, not, and that's not true. I didn't say all of them I know that are white, but that's not true at all. But anyway, the Cajun Navy forced to pay state fees before rescuing Louisiana victims. This is another story. We talked last week about letting no good deed go unpunished. Remember when the guy stopped to pull the kids out of the ditch, the runoff in the ditch, and then they killed him? And then we had the other one, the other gal that took somebody to the hospital and it bled all over her car, and they kept her car. She needed $2,500 to clean it because it was a biohazard. Let no good deed go unpunished. Cajun Navy is a group of volunteers that operates at its own expense to rescue people trapped in flooded areas in Louisiana. They use their own boats, they risk their lives, and now that people have noticed that they are far more effective than the government rescue efforts, there are plans to require them to pay a fee before they are allowed to do any good. Don't worry, legislators said, it's just a small fee, maybe only $50. They don't even know yet. They don't even know what it's for, or what they're going to, how much it's going to cost, what they're going to do with it. They just want you to pay a fee. Maybe $50. Let me just pull something out of my ass here, and that's what it'll be, $20, $115, $72, $61, maybe. We'll legislate it here. We'll get it all figured out and let you know. He said that would be worth it to put authority behind the Cajun Navy, wouldn't it? Worth it to who? Authority for what? They're already, so you're going to buy it. This automatically affiliates you with the government. Are you kidding me right now? You're going to buy this. You're going to pay a small, maybe $50. Wouldn't it be worth it to put authority behind the Cajun Navy? And who gains out of this? Well, not the Cajun Navy. Not the people that need to be rescued. Not the people that's wanting to help. What's it for? Well, You know what? There's a... I'm going to see if I can bring something up here. Pardon me for wasting your time here, but I'm going to try to bring something up for... because there's a video here that I want you to listen to. And I think it'll be worth your wait. I should have had this up already. Just take me a second here. Cajun Navy Force to Pay State. Let's see if that'll bring it up for us. I've got, there it is. By golly, that wasn't too hard. I want to let you listen to this in this legislator's own words here. State Senator Jonathan Perry is going to explain this for us and make you believe that it's okay that the Cajun Navy is going to have teeth. They're going to have authority behind them when they pay this. Maybe only $50. I don't know. We'll see. See what Jonathan Perry has to say here. Come on, Jonathan, lay it on us.
6:23 at KPL. Welcome back to Acadiana's Morning News as we continue to follow the recovery efforts here in Acadiana and across the state. Wait till you hear the stats, Bernie, that I have later on today. You know, someone has gone through, as they do after these sorts of things happen, and tally up. You know, because we just, I mean, it was a couple really bad days of rain where the water came up. You know, that's what matters to us. But when you start getting numbers like 6.9 trillion, that was the number of gallons of rain that fell on the state of Louisiana in those 3 days. 6.9 trillion gallons. It's crazy. Wow. Another thing we've been talking about are the good-meaning people and those who are really trying to give back. And what we know in our area as the Cajun Navy, we have talked about it on this show before, especially those who helped out in Katrina. We even had the filmmaker who made the documentary about the Cajun Navy that came out last year. And once again... they were met with roadblocks when the group of people who had boats who were ready to help rescue people were turned away from some of those busiest areas. And now there are calls for legislation that would maybe permit those people so that they can help in the future. Joining us on the phone, State Senator Jonathan Perry. Good morning.
Good morning. How y'all doing?
We're doing okay. All right, so you're busy. You're busy on a variety of different levels. You got your family to worry about. You got a little water in your house. You got a little water at the office. Plus, you're trying to help out people who want to help out other people. Are you exhausted yet?
I'm getting there, but you know, it's part of it. You always get that second wind, so I'm not there yet. This weekend, I'll probably sleep in a little bit later than normal.
Yeah, I would imagine so. Well, best of luck to you, and we'll say prayers for your family too.
Thank you.
Because I know it's not easy. All right, now we have all talked about this after Katrina, after Rita. So many people in the Acadiana area and other areas were so upset because they got turned away to help and go do rescue missions. And I'm sure because they don't want, you know, nobody wants the state to be liable if somebody gets hurt. You don't want law enforcement officials and or Department of Wildlife and Fisheries, which they're law enforcement as well, to have to go and find these people. At the same time, you had Good Samaritans who found other ways to get in. They did the same thing this go-round. We need a Cajun Navy law And so you are working on it even now as you're trying to figure out all that stuff at your home.
Yeah, I actually started getting calls, texts, and emails as soon as the floodwaters started coming in. Mm-hmm. And on anything like that, you know, politicians aren't the smartest people in the world. We just got to do what we can, and most of the time the good ideas come from the constituents. So basically what I did was I just automatically emailed the Senate staff and told them what I was looking at doing. And yesterday started actually putting language together. I mean, at the end of the day, there's going to be two things that are going to be the hurdle when you approach it from the state standpoint. As you just mentioned, liability is going to be number one from them. They don't want the liability of someone going out to rescue someone and then they not being able to, you know, even find them once they go out. And then, you know, what's in place to be able to get somebody permitted or trained to be able to do that. So, secondly, there's a cost. I'm telling y'all right now, this is very doable. It's going to take some work, but it's very doable to eliminate the liability from the state and also put a cost, even if it's a $25 or $50 training seminar where the person has some type of identification.
Yep.
That way, when they get to a barricade, they get somewhere where they are able to launch their boats.
Mm-hmm.
Law enforcement can check with them, make sure they've been trained, that they're, quote, certified, whatever you want to call
yeah.
it. And then after that, the state is released. There's nothing for the state to worry about. It's very similar. Okay, picture this. In our area, we have a lot of rural areas. So what do we have? We have a lot of volunteer fire departments.
Stop right there. Just stop for a minute. He's telling me, actually he's telling all of us, that if you go through a $25 training class, little seminar, that will relieve the state of any liability. Now, maybe I'm as dumb as he sounds, but the state wasn't involved to begin with. So if the Cajun Navy goes out to save somebody and screws it up and somebody gets hurt, gets lost, swept downstream, who's going to come up and say, hey, let's sue the state? I mean, this is just so stupid, it's unbelievable. Now, they're going to say, okay, you trained them, you permitted them, and now something has happened. Now, we're going to sue the state. And as far as I'm concerned, it looks to me like, am I wrong? Am I the stupid one here? It looks to me like once the state has stuck their stinking fingers in it, their sticky stinking fingers in it, then now if something happens, they've got their name all over it. All over their little $25 class or whatever there. It seems to me that would open them up for a lawsuit. They say, it looks to me, they'd say, okay, y'all want to do it? You go ahead. We don't want nothing to do with it. Don't come to us if you get lost. You know, that's all on y'all. You just take care of it. And we're done with it. We don't want nothing to do with it. Well, I don't know, but I'm going to finish listening to this whether y'all want to or not.
Okay?
Absolutely.
It's the same thing.
Yes.
When a house is on fire in a rural area, they're not just going to let Mr. Smith, who has no training, in that area.
Amen.
But if you're a volunteer fire department or a volunteer fireman and you've...
If the volunteer fire department is not handy and Mr. Smith comes over there with a bucket full of water and puts my fire out and tries to and the house burns down, I'm not going to sue the state. What are these people thinking? I don't even get it here.
And I want the rest of you cowboys to know something. There's a new sheriff in town.
Have that training, and you know what to do. You're able to go in there and assist. I'm telling y'all, it's the same concept. It's just thinking outside the box.
Absolutely.
Most of the people in our area, they were driving boats before they drove vehicles.
Yeah.
They really did.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's a way to... You know, the 30,000 people that were rescued, if we can eliminate 10% of that from the state, then that's 10% where they can put efforts elsewhere. It makes so much sense, and I think it's doable.
And it could save lives, you know.
So basically, I mean, couldn't we just make it so that these men and women who want to do this, because it's not just men. We should point that out. There are a couple women who are into it too. That, I mean, if all you need is a waiver, I'm sure these guys would be willing to sign a waiver, you know, that damage to their boat or, you know, and that sort of thing. You never want people to go in to the flooded areas in general in cars because then they could get trapped. But these guys are in boats. They're usually well prepared, and they usually know how to use their boats in a way that could really help people and really, you know, get people saved. Is that
Absolutely.
An option? I mean, is it just the legality that's the biggest holdup?
Yes, yes. The number one thing is the liability. That is the number one thing anytime you're going to be dealing with the state and everything. I mean, we fought that on 167 between Maurice and Abbeville. People were bombarding our office with opening, you know, trying to get flow north and south on just the double northbound, and it becomes a liability issue. And I get all that.
Well, sure.
But, you know, when we're talking about this, I think it is a very simple solution. Now, look, somebody might sit at the table with me and say, Jonathan, y'all didn't think about this, this, and this. Well, that's fine. Tell me about it. Mm-hmm. Let's, you know, cross those hurdles when we get there.
Absolutely. I mean, I'm with you. I think it can be done. It's going to take a lot of hard work, and we're here for it. And so are all the people that listen to this station and our sister stations. Try to tell a Cajun no.
No, you're right. And I know you've been, you know, fighting for something like this for a long time, mm-hmm. So we'll just move it forward and call it the Bernadette Lee Law.
Sounds like a great Lifetime movie.
I'm going to give me a button. Yeah, but it won't be my law. You know whose law that is, and we're teasing right now, but yes, it's going to be those books.
All right, that's enough of that. We get it. Anyway, this seems to me way, way beyond... yeah, that's right, Mountain Chew. It's a tax. It's all it is, a tax. It's a tax on nothing. It's a tax just to get, help tax. Just to get money out of them, just for what... Hey, those guys are doing something. Let's tax them. They're moving, and they're doing something good. Let's tax them. Man, oh man. I gotta find another story. Let's, how much time we got? I got a half an hour. I'm gonna play you a little short song here. And I'm gonna get ready to read you a bedtime story. And then we're gonna call it a night.
South of the border, hey, I know a lad. He's got more fun than anybody's had. Don't got no worry, don't got no dough. Everybody's wondering about Mexican Joe. In old Mexico, they call him the Rumba King. Leads all the women around on a string. When they go out, they get a million thrills. But the lovely senoritas wind up with the bills. Dancing, romancing, always on the go. Sun shining down on Mexican Joe. See him when he comes their way. He spreads so much joy everywhere he goes. Everyone shouts, Viva la Mexican Joe. He likes to gamble at poker, he's an ace. He's always lucky with the cards that got a face. At winning the money, he is sure a whiz. But when they win, they don't collect cause they don't know where he is. Dancing, romancing, always on the go. Sun shining down on Mexican Joe.
don't got no income tax, cause he don't got no dough. Still he gets along just fine, how we'll never know. He's got everything he wants, a girl, a drink, a song. If we use his formula, we surely can't go wrong. His favorite playground is anywhere there's girls. He's got that something that sets their hearts awhirl. It couldn't be his money, cause he ain't gotta pay so. But when he wants a kiss, all he gotta do is say so. Dancing, romancing, always on the go. Sun shining down on Mexican Joe.
Welcome back to another segment of the Shooting Bench, right here on the Survival Circle Radio Network. Okay, now I promised y'all I'd read you a story. This, Amy likes this story. I like this story. This was written by a woman, and she calls herself a real woman. It's an open letter to men. Some of you may have already seen it. And, you know, we've alluded to the fact numerous times that the destruction of America may be, or maybe I should rephrase that, maybe I should say that the feminization of the American male is going to lead to the destruction of America or contribute to it. And we have, as men, we get in trouble for holding doors open for women sometimes. We get in trouble for just the silliest little things. You know, I can remember for years and years and years down in, every place I went, but it probably started in Texas. Every bartender, I mean, every barmaid down there, his name was Baby or Sweetheart or Honey. And they eat it up. Nary damn one of them ever got mad at us for saying that. They like it. They enjoy the attention. And nowadays you do it and they call they try to press charges on you or sue you for being a sexist or whatever. So this woman here is saying that, you know, I like men being what men are supposed to be. And she's got this big long story here about it, and I think you'll enjoy it, so bear with me here. She says, "Dear men, every day there's news and outrage about the latest female tragedy, the war on women, the hashtag SJW feminist women, the body shaming women. Then there's rape culture and the male privilege and microaggression. Seems to me if you're a man in this world, there's nothing you can do right. If you tell a woman to smile, you're a sexist. If you tell a woman she's pretty, you're reducing her to just her looks. If you tell a woman she's smart, you're a sexist for being surprised that she's smart and more than just her body. If you vocalize that you think a hot woman is hot, oh geez, bar and lock the doors. The feminists will stab you with their steely knives. Well, as a woman, here's something you need to know. Women love men for being men." Okay, several feminist keyboards have just been reduced to dust. Chicas are hammering their keys like the old cavemen hammered their women before dragging them into the cave. Oh, that right there? That is a joke. I know you feminists don't think it's funny. Nothing to you is funny. That's why it's funny. Yes, I know you're out there, SJW feminists. You're going to call me a bitch. You're going to call me a sellout. You're going to say I'm a I'm an ignorant this, that, and plenty of the other four- and five-letter words because I dared to write women love men, despite the glaring proof that women do love men. Proof? The perpetration of the species. You know, men and women getting together, doing the deed, and having not aborted their babies. I can hear y'all yelling patriarchy and rape out there. Yell and scream and stomp all you want. I don't care. It's background noise. This letter is for the men who go out and do, who build, who create, who pursue excellence, who make the world a little better by being unapologetic men. I'm not talking to the jerks and the creeps. They get too much attention and they do not represent all men, okay? Okay. Sorry, guys. I had to address those harpies first because they're shrill and annoying. Where was I? Right. Women love men. Millions of women, myself included, celebrate you guys for being dudes. We may joke about how you annoy us with your one thing at a time focus, but we love that too. Life is simpler and better with you in it. We love how you say what you mean. You're uncomplicated, straightforward, and easy to talk to. And we usually don't have to issue disclaimers before we speak to you, so thanks for that. We appreciate that you want to protect women, despite that all the feminists say millions of us know you care for women. We know you would pound a punk into the ground if he tried messing with us. We know you love children and want to protect them. We know you want to call your daughters... We know you want to call your daughters princesses. Hang on a second here. We know you want to call your daughters princesses, and you're not being patriarchal when you do. We celebrate your ambition. One of my favorite qualities in a man is his drive to be his best. He likes to take risks because he likes to push his limits and test his strength. He likes to be challenged both in his career and his personal pursuits. Every day, he is working to better himself to be a greater man than he was before. We love your competitive drive. Women might mock you for needing to outdo the other guys, but this woman, at least, enjoys it. That's life without... What's life without a little competition? Thanks for the sarcastic back and forth. You're trying to one-up your buddy at the gym. Rock on. We'll watch and cheer you on. But you better win. We love your self-deprecating humor and how you want to make us laugh. This one should be self-evident, but sadly it's not. Even when we don't want to be cheered up, you still try. You're a soldier who loves his woman. Even if your woman gives you the look, I'd like to think that deep down she's not plotting to smother you with a pillow when you snore. She's appreciating your good humor. Okay, maybe she wishes you didn't snore so much. Hey, she's human too. Oh, SJWs, give it a rest. Are all men like the ones I'm describing? No, but a lot of them are. And not everything is about you and your microaggressions and fat shaming. Stop taking up all the attention. This shouldn't be about you. We love how you pursue us when you like us, and we like you. Three feminist brains just exploded right there. Yes, men, we like it when you call us. We like it when you show us how much you care for us by actively pursuing us. Even when you have us, seven more feminist brains just exploded. We like it when you open the door and treat us like queens. We like it when you make the plans and when you have direction. So guys, when you're constantly bitch-slapped by the loud modern feminists for man-spreading, or whatever other new terms they're going to pull out of their uptight butts, know that millions of women cherish you for exactly who you are. Men. The world is a better place with men in it. Yes, I wrote that. Millions of us support you. We support your careers. We support your choices. We love you for being masculine, and we celebrate you in it. Now go chop some wood and make us a fire. So, there you go. And I thought that was a great deal. Amy thought it was great. Amy thinks that way. Amy's is a doll, by the way. And I'm not a sexist for calling her that. But... anyway, let me go back over here and see what's going on in the chat rooms. But Minnie finds the damnedest story sometimes. Two boys found living in an underground sewer in Washington State. Well, it's a good way not to have to worry about having too much company, I guess, isn't it? Mountain shooter, that's right. If you don't say anything, well, don't you like me? How come you're not talking to me? Look, I'm just taking a break, okay? And Zardoz is absolutely right, too. The masculinizing or whatever of girls is also happening. They will not know how to accept a man actually treating them like a woman. Their language is as bad. I know that pisses me off so bad. Get out there and some of these women sound just like sailors or truck drivers or bikers or whatever. And it's not appealing whatsoever. You know, I could write a story just like this woman wrote here about women. I like women to be like women. I don't want them to. I'm not a big fan of women that smoke. I'm not a big fan of women that cuss like a sailor. I like women that are like women, you know, like my wife. That's good, Zardoz. I agree. Women do love men. I like being. Let's see. What'd you say? I like being treated with the honor of being a woman. Okay. I don't know if that's. I don't know if I can find a link for that. If I do, I'll. That's right, Radio Doc. The feminazis are not going to like that. That's a fact. They sure are not. If I can find a link for it, I'll put it in the chat room for you. But, all right. Let's see how much time we got. We got time to do lots of stuff here. And by the way, Radio Doc, if you and C7 want to try to get together, we'll see if we can schedule a class up there somewhere. There's a couple of real good safe places to shoot up in La Plata up there, out by the old schoolhouse, just out down the road, down back towards the east from the old schoolhouse there. Or if you have some other places, we've actually done several classes around, did some out there behind, out where the drag strip is out there, towards Bloomfield. There's places out there to shoot, so we won't have too much trouble finding a place to shoot. We just need to find some people that want to, get involved in class out there. Or maybe we could just go, you know, we might do a disaster preparedness thing. We go out there in McGee Park. We can get in there real cheap. And we might do some classroom stuff. We can do some disaster preparedness, lethal force issues. There's a lot of different things we can do. We might do the same kind of thing that I'm doing up here on the 16th of September and get into a... communications class for the public. You guys toss it around and see what you think up there. Okay, let's see here. I've got so many of these things. Did you read the story about the preteen hunter? She was 11. She's 12 years old, and boy. As she got those liberals so mad they could spit. They are just having the babies over this. She posted a picture. And actually several of them. But one of them, she's got she's posing by a giraffe. 12 years old. Killed a big old giraffe. Big old thing. Not just because it's got a long neck. It was just a big, heavy-bodied giraffe. And, boy, I tell you, these people went absolutely crazy over this. She's had, just like several other hunters have, you know, she's got her death threats and calling her sick and an animal hater and all that stuff. Remember Kendall Jones out of Texas? Absolutely stunning, stunningly gorgeous what was she, 16, 17 years old, drop-dead gorgeous. And she killed, what was it? I don't remember what it was. I don't think it was just a deer. It may have been. It seems like she went somewhere else. But anyway, she caught all kinds of grief for that, just for hunting. This little girl, 12 years old, posing here by a zebra that she got with a bow. And you people have to understand, you know, yeah, you know, we make seat covers out of zebra hides, and then we stuff the heads and hang them on the wall and all that stuff. But if you look at the what behind the scenes, what we don't see is the fact that literally hundreds of natives take these animals and feed their families, feed entire communities. Man, a giraffe is a lot of meat. So yeah, I guess you could you know, there are people, and I know some, few of them, that go absolutely nuts over killing an animal, period. All right, looking at it from their side, I guess, yeah, you could say it's, you know, it's despicable just to kill an animal just for the sport to have the head. But, you know, look at the other side of that coin. Look how many people are eating. Those people, In a lot of these villages and stuff, they don't have the means to go out. You know, they don't have a government that gives them everything that they need all the time. They'll let them die. So when hunters come over there and spend money, they put money into the local economy, into hotels and guides and all this kind of stuff. And then these little villages get hundreds and hundreds, maybe thousands of pounds of meat. So, you know, as far as I'm concerned, it's a win-win situation. I don't care if you're a 12-year-old girl or what you are. The animals are not going to waste. Those people eat every single edible part on these. They take, they make stuff out of the bones. They, you know, whatever the claws, the teeth, or whatever. Nothing goes to waste on these animals. So, frankly, I can't see that really as a bad thing. So, Radio Doc, you mean to tell me that Ken's not there? He got transferred to the Dakotas? Really? Unbelievable. I didn't know that. I'll be darned. Well, anyway, we can, if you want, you know, we can set up a weekend and do a whole bunch of different stuff over there for very reasonable. So get with me on that when you get a chance, and we'll see if we can work something out there. Okay. I'm going to see if I can sneak one more in here. We got about 10 minutes. Let me look one more time. See what I've got in all this huge list of stuff. I am narrowing it down, though. Let's, how about this one? Do I want to do this? Stand by a minute. Let's see if we can do this one. No, actually, I think I'll save that one for a Wednesday night. That's kind of long, and it's a little more related to other stuff. Got that out of the way. I'm going to work on that one. Got several lethal force deals here. There's one where a young man stood up against an armed robber, tried to take cash from his mother's store at gunpoint. This was in right outside of Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, just last week. All of it caught on camera, luckily. This 19-year-old, they call him a teenager. You know, any other time, they call him a man. He's 19, yes, so technically he's a teenager, but he's an adult. Anyway, he's working at this market Wednesday night when this guy walked in about 8 o'clock at night wearing a mask and carrying a revolver. And what I don't know, it doesn't specify if it was a silver Glock revolver or not. It may have been. Female customer standing at the counter in the process of paying for her stuff. When all this unfolded, customer stepped away from the counter as the suspect demanded cash from the clerk, first in English, then in Spanish. The woman backed up and appeared to be dialing on her cell phone, presumably to the police, as she tried to make her way to the door. Just moments after the woman was through the door, I hate these professional stories with so many typos. The word is women here, and it's supposed to be woman. Just moments after the woman was through the door, Santo pulled out his shotgun from behind the counter and opened fire on the suspect. Suspect promptly made his way out of the store, nearly knocking the female customer down in the process. And kid gave chase to the suspect, but he got away. While making his escape, the suspect dropped his hat and left a small trail of blood, which authorities discovered when they responded to the silent burglar alarm. Shortly after all this started taking place, he wasn't immediately found. Anyway, it doesn't matter whether we found him or not. What matters is this kid was had the wherewithal there and attitude to take care of business, and I'm glad that he did what he did. I'm glad we have. It's nice to see youth out there. I mean, like I said, 19-year-old is a man, but it's still youth. When we look at the millennials, as they call them, coming up here, so many of them would say, well, you know, the guy probably needs the money. His family's hungry, and he probably just needs the money. Well, tell him to go get a job. Tell him to sell his revolver and get money. You know, do whatever he needs to do. And there is no justification for stealing from honest folks. It just ain't. There's just not anything you can do to justify that. This is one thing that was mentioned numerous times in Lavoie's book about the constitutionality and the ethical and moral issues that come up from stealing, from taking other people's things when it's not yours, when you don't have permission. And one of the first times it was mentioned, maybe the second time, in Lavoie's book is when they were out there. It was cold and they were starving, and they come up on a bull or a steer out there, and this I think it was Cat had the opportunity to kill that bull and get some meat and feed herself, and I believe she had a baby with her at that time. Not her baby, but somebody else's, if I remember right. I need to read that book again. It's been a little while. But anyway, she said in the book that I remember what Dad always told us about taking something that didn't belong to us. So she... Now, you know, I think that there is a... And I may be wrong. I wouldn't second guess anybody on this, but in a situation like that, when it comes down to the possibility of starving, you know, of welfare of myself, and especially if I was responsible for somebody else, especially if it was a kid, I think there's a limit there somewhere where, you know, I'll take my chances. I'll pay for the steer. And I've told you this story before when my dad got us lost. I probably told it to you a dozen times, but when my dad got us lost when I was, you know, 5 or 6 years old out there, and we stayed out in the woods. We were not prepared to stay, and it was cold. And, you know, we covered up with saddles and saddle blankets and oak leaves and pine needles and stuff. No way to make a fire. And we went out the next morning and found, I'll never forget, it was a Volkswagen bus. You remember they were real popular, the color. It was kind of a light blue, grayish blue color. Real popular in the Volkswagen line. And we come up on this. They had their table sitting out beside there, and they had, Vienna sausages and crackers and stuff out there. And we sit down, and we were starving. And we sat down there and eat, and my dad took a pocket full of change and laid it in the seat of the bus and wrote a note in the dust on the windshield telling them what happened. And I think that's okay. We paid for what we took, and we weren't starving anymore. And I don't see anything wrong with that. You know, back then, you could get a whole damn shopping cart full of groceries for $20. I mean, full. So a handful of change for, you know, a couple of cans of Vienna sausages and a half a box of crackers and whatever else. Well, I don't remember what it was, but, you know, that, well, I think we were, he was paid handsomely for what we took there. And frankly, I don't see a thing in the world wrong with that. So anyway, well, the time has come when all good boys and girls should start thinking about getting to bed. So we're going to think about it. Not going to think about it very hard, but I'm going to think about it. And we will see you all Wednesday. Hope you all have a good tomorrow. If you're in Arizona, get out and vote in the primaries tomorrow if you haven't already in the early voting. I kind of miss doing an hour every night, but I really do like having a couple of nights open to do other stuff here. So far this schedule is working out okay. The 3 hours on Friday is a little bit tough, and getting in here at 7 for Amy is a little bit tough, but we're gonna try to stick it out here and see if we can make it work for us. It seems to be working for you guys as well, so we'll just keep on keeping on and see what happens. Okay, good night. Well, that wraps up another edition of the Shooting Bench. Join me Monday and Wednesday from 8 to 10 p.m. Pacific, and again on Fridays from 7 to 10 for the Shooting Bench. Good night, and thanks for joining me. No explanation, no reconciliation.